Attention, attention, presenting His Eminence, our Imperious Leader.
And welcome back to Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want. Just do not call me the State of the Union or anything you want. Just call me just do not call me late for dinner. And this is Subject to Discussion live on LVRocks.com every Tuesday night from 7 o'clock Pacific time until 9 o'clock Pacific time. And if you're in the Mountain Time Zone, it's 8 o'clock. If you're in Chicago, it's 9 o'clock. And if you're in New York City, it's 10 o'clock. And the program is podcasted as well on LVRocks.com. And tonight, we're going to do our State of Union review here, but Bush is still speaking. So he started about 10 minutes late. I guess there was a little incident on Capitol Hill. Apparently, Cindy Sheehan was detained by the Capitol Police. I don't know if that had anything to do with him starting his speech late or not, but that's the latest I have, that Cindy Sheehan was held before Bush's speech. I guess she had an invitation to sit in the gallery and take the speech in personally, but apparently the Capitol Police held her. So, and first of all, we'll have on Justin from the Dunkelvin blog, and then in the second half hour, we'll bring on Chip from PoliticalSports.com, and then the second hour, we'll have Philip Nguyen. He's the co-founder of BlogCritics.org, and he'll give us a state of the BlogCritics.org address and a pop culture discussion. And keeping in the State of the Union theme here, in the last half hour, we have Koenig Rules. He'll be on with the State of Galactica address. And I've talked to Aaron Douglas, and he's willing to come on the program next week. And of course, he plays Tyrell, so he's on a trip right now, so hopefully I'll hope to doubly reconfirm him within the next couple of days. So, and I think we'll bring on Justin from the Dunkelvin. Okay, we can bring him on. Is he there? No, oh, I thought somebody called.
Yeah, I picked it up, but he was gone.
Oh, no. Oh, well, Justin, if you're out there, you can call back again. We'll bring it right on. And because Bush is still speaking, I tried to one of these live blogger things, but I don't know. I mean, I don't really like it much. But he opened his address with talking about, took him, of course, they mentioned the, because we should mention too, the passing of Coretta Scott King today. And they actually had the images on, was it CNN, of them driving a silver hearse over the border from Mexico and back into California. Why didn't they put her body in a plane and fly it back? I don't know. I don't know what's with that, but it's kind of a morbid shot of the news helicopters following the hearse. And Bush started speaking about differences cannot. Well, before you get to that, there's a poll that came out and it'll set the stage for how the American people are feeling about the State of the Union. This poll was taken last week. It says most think Bush is failing in his second term and a president looking forward to congressional campaigning. A majority of Americans are more than likely to vote for a candidate in November's congressional elections who opposes President Bush, and 58% consider his second term a failure so far, according to a poll released Thursday. Fewer people consider Bush to be honest and trustworthy now than did a year ago, and 53% said they believe his administration deliberately misled the public about Iraq's purported weapons program before the U.S. invasion in 2003, the USA Today Gallup poll found. 58% of those polled said Bush's second term thus far has been a failure, while 38% said they consider it a success. A smaller number, 52%, consider his entire presidency a failure to this date, with 46% calling it successful. But 51% of those polled said they were more likely to vote for a candidate in congressional elections who opposes Bush. So, I mean, he's not doing too well at all. Bush's own approval rating remained at 43%, unchanged since mid-December. Nearly two-thirds of those surveyed in the latest poll, 62% say they were dissatisfied with the way things are going in the United States, while 35% they were satisfied. And 64% said things in the United States have gotten worse in the past 5 years, while 20% said things are getting have improved. So I don't know where to get these people on. And there's a split on honesty. So Americans were divided evenly, 49-49, in question of Bush's honesty. 53% said they believe his administration deliberately misled the public about whether Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Terrorism was next at 57%. There's the war topped the list of respondents' concerns. 34% say considered economic conditions good, 5% said excellent, while 41% rated economy as fair, and 18% said poor. So, anyway. And I think Justin's on the line? Oh, okay. Well, there he is. There you go. Justin from the Dunkelvin Centrist Political Blog, are you there?
I Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
What's going on? Is he still speaking as we speak?
No, he just ended. That's why I actually called in. I called in a little bit earlier.
Oh, okay.
To tell you I wasn't going to actually talk to anybody until I finished watching the speech. But.
Ah. Oh, I heard it. There you go. Yeah, now, so he just got to say good thank. I had to thank President Bush for ending right before I started my program, huh?
No, I think that he timed that.
Yeah, he timed it. He didn't want to catch the wrath of subject to discussion.
No, subject to discussion chat board.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, he started late, you know, because, as I said, I don't know, Cindy Sheehan was held by the Capitol Police before the speech, so I don't know if that delayed, you know, him coming in or not.
Because
there the Cylons, they're late, too. No, I think they're at the State of the Union. Were the Cylons at the State of the Union? Because they said...
There might have been. You never know. You know, they look just like us. So.
I think it's Katie Sackhoff was there. I could have swore I saw him shaking hands with Hillary. But they actually had a little news tidbit here that the first non-human attendee at the State of the Union was there this evening. First non-human. It was a dog, Rex the Wonder Dog, from the dog that sniffed for bodies at 9/11 at the Ground Zero. The Wonder Dog was there. Yes. Yes, and that dog sat next to the other dog. No, and she is a congresswoman from, I don't know, I'm kidding. So, I mean, how do you think? How did he end the speech? Because I caught up until the last 8 minutes or so.
Oh, you know, he was just talking about the commitment to our people. He was talking about AIDS. That's pretty much how he ended the speech. And, you know, God bless America. And there you are. I think overall it was a good speech. I think that there were a lot of promises. I think that he framed the whole war in Iraq thing and the war on terrorism as unfortunately, I think he framed it as a fairly partisan issue. You know, much like they have, you know, Bush and Rove have for, you know, as long as he's been in office, as long as we've had a war on terrorism. I think you know, overall it was a decent speech. You know,
you liked it?
Speech. I like some of the ideas. I like the idea that he said that we were addicted to oil. That's, you know, it's dead on, and I've been calling on my blog for some more ideas about how to get out of this predicament. He has a 30-year plan. I think there are some things possible that they're not taking into account. I don't know that they're necessarily ignoring it, but we have some coal-to-gas technology out there that will produce crude at $30 a barrel, which is undercuts the market by, I think, like $30 right now, because oil's at about $60 a barrel right now.
And absolutely.
It's threatening to go up to possibly even $90 if we get into some sort of skirmish type of thing with Iran. If they cut off their supplies, they only have 5% of they only produce 5% of the world's oil, but they could really upset the market.
Well, to me, when I was listening to that, he sounded like he was echoing his speech a few years ago when he was starting to pound the drums about Iraq. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The Iran thing, it seemed like he was talking about regime change in all of those countries.
Mm-hmm.
He was essentially equating democracy with freedom. I think that he basically thinks that that every single nation in the world should be a democracy. It's hard to argue with that. But at the end of the day, I think it really has to come down to the individual country and intervention in there and into a country just for the sake of changing them into a democracy.
I think
is a really, really dangerous policy.
Yeah, well, he seemed to imply, I was reading into it, that it's up to us to make these democracies, democracies where there's countries where there's dictatorships. Did it come across that way to you?
Yeah. It did. That's really what concerned me. It definitely hinted at regime change. I don't know if this is just a direct, kind of like, we will do it, that option is on the table type of thing. It doesn't mean that, you know, it doesn't mean that we will do it, but the option is still on the table. I agree. I don't think Iran getting nuclear weapons is a bad thing.
Oh, absolutely.
We cannot allow that to happen. We just can't. He's talking tough, and you know, one tends to wonder if we should have focused on Iran instead of Iraq.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm reading his speech now. They already have the transcript up at the WashingtonPost.com. He says here, lacking the military strength to challenge us directly. The first half of the speech was all about terrorism and terrorists, right? The terrorists have chosen weapons of fear. They murder children at a school in Beslan or blow up commuters in London. So, I mean, you know, a lot of people are saying that earlier today he's going to use this to scare the American people again, like they did with the raising up and down of the terrorist level and all that. What do you think
about
that?
Let's not kid ourselves. Bush is also using fear. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the fear is unfounded, and I think some of the fear, you know, is perfectly rational. Mm-hmm. I think the way that he was talking about justifying the warrantless wiretaps was pretty ridiculous, honestly.
Yeah.
It could have prevented 9/11. Well, you know what?
Yeah.
He could have gotten warrants to the FISA court to monitor communications from inside the U.S. to the places overseas.
Yeah.
And that would be perfectly legal.
Yeah.
That's not what we're debating. We're not debating if we can actually listen into terrorist conversations from here to overseas.
Mm.
We're debating on him not getting, and they're retroactive warrants too.
Mm.
You can, if you think it is in the, it is so pertinent, you can get a warrant and then three or four days later go back and, or you can get a wiretap, I mean, 3 or 4 days later go back and get a retroactive warrant.
Exactly.
To justify the wiretap that you got. So I think he's. I think that he's certainly preying on the possible ignorance of voters out there.
Yeah, that
and,
was.
And I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah, he was really. I got the impression he's like the a lady who's just a little pregnant. You know what I'm saying? When he's trying to defend himself over this wiretapping business. I mean, I thought he was going to ignore that completely, but he jumped right into it. I mean, I you got to admire the man. I mean, he goes right into adversity. You know, he doesn't care. You know what I mean?
Well, and part of it, honestly, this is his last term.
Yeah, and he's been a lame duck.
I think he truly believes. Sorry, didn't mean to cut off there, but I think he truly believes that he's going to be judged 20 years from now.
Mm.
He's not going to be judged. You know, well, he is obviously being judged right now, but the ultimate judge of his presidency is going to be coming 20 years from now. And he talked like a guy who thought that he was going to be judged 20 years from now.
Hmm.
You know, he was talking about programs that were going to wean us off of oil at least, 75% by, 2030. You know, I mean, 2030 is 24 years from now.
Yeah.
So, that's fine, but it also certainly gives me pause. I mean, I'm wondering about, the here and now. I'm wondering about, what is the best way to fight the war on terror?
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, what he was saying tonight was stay the course in Iraq and possibly have, at least he was hinting at, possible regime change in all these other countries.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily have to be military, but that certainly wasn't off the table. And you know what? It shouldn't be off the table. We should always have every option available to us. Is it kind of a here we go again?
What was that? Shooting? Hello?
What's that?
Oh, I heard someone. It's like a shooting. Did somebody get shot? No.
No. Did we have some interference?
No, I heard something. There's like a gunshot going on. I'm like, what the hell was that?
No, not on this side.
Where are you at? What side
are you
on?
You are in Las Vegas, right?
Hey, no, I'm fine here. I think it came from your end. Anyway.
Well, I don't know. That must have been some electronic interference.
Yeah, I think it's the renditioning. They're coming for us. They're going to rendition us. But I'm reading his speech here. He says, our enemy is brutal. Iraq is difficult. I mean, he's stating the obvious. I mean, no kidding. I lost this by a page down. I lost. One thing he didn't mention was the deficit and the debt. It was completely accountability for that whatsoever. You know, he's raised the debt. $4 trillion since he's been in office. Yet he seems to have ignored his responsibility for that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Well, he actually, I have to correct you there.
Oh,
he did?
He did
mention the deficit. Yeah, he said that cutting entitlement programs, he's going to cut up to 140 programs that are underperforming, and that'll cut the deficit in half, like in the next, like by 2008, I think, or 2009, I think, is what he said.
Those are pine.
But I don't think that that's the numbers. I don't think that the numbers add up on that. They always. Basically, what happens is they always kind of underestimate the whole, like, you know, how much they're going to, you know, how much the deficit is going to drop. And then when it like comes in just a little bit over that, they're like, oh, look at this. You know, look at our estimates. We're this low and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the deficit has still risen. You know, we don't know, right? Yeah. 2009, we don't know.
Yeah,
we don't know. We don't know what his definition of underperforming is.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. And instead of taking, cutting out the he made some remark about the earmarks in the budget. That's supposed to help stave off, cut the deficit as well. But nothing, cut out the pork. And they've all said that. I mean,
every president wants a line item veto.
Yeah, they'll never get it. And then, Bush has yet to veto a single spending bill since he's been in office. So he could have done some things to stop this debt a long time ago. But he's refused to veto a spending bill since day one.
I don't think he's vetoed one bill.
Yeah.
You know, and this kind of goes to the kind of the whole. I know I've given Democrats a kind of a rough time about not having ideas, and in the past, but I mean, at the end of the day, though, they're in the minority, and so to try to get these things out of committee, then into the Congress, Senate, get it passed. It's a difficult process.
Mm.
And so most of these things are being, most of these bills are being authored by Republicans.
Yeah.
And so basically I think if it's authored by a Republican, a Republican president is more likely to say thumbs up or just, want to modify it a little bit, blah, 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 unless it's an anti-torture bill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean.
And then you're going to see him possibly try to veto that, and I think that's really telling, right?
Mm-hmm.
They won't veto any type of spending stuff, but they're going to veto the anti-torture bill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's, that's how a lot of people see this presidency defined as. You kind of misplaced priorities, right?
Deficit
is going up. We're torturing people. We're our credibility is not what it was before 9/11 or just right after 9/11 anymore because we're basically taking part in a lot of. A lot of kind of underhanded tactics.
Yeah.
A lot of tactics that the enemy might use.
Yeah.
The terrorists might use, and it makes people question our leadership. And I think I think rightly so. But overall, the speech tonight, I thought it was good. I thought that he had some pretty interesting ideas. I liked his ideas about education.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, don't agree with the unfunded mandate of No Child Left Behind. He was talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Called it a big success. I have yet to see really any proof of that. Here's what I mean by good speech. It was a good speech for Bush.
Yeah.
He said what he needed to. He framed the whole war on terrorism back to more of like a partisan issue. The whole cut and run versus we need to stay the course and be successful because freedom depends upon it. Likening these moments to Abraham Lincoln, basically declaring war, basically splitting apart the Union or, Martin Luther King. Just stopping in Birmingham and just kind of, allowing concessions, which I think was a little bit overwrought.
He's aligning himself with these. Yeah, here he is in the speech. He says, Lincoln could have accepted peace at a cost of disunity and continued slavery. Martin Luther King could have stopped at Birmingham or at Selma and achieved only half of a victory over segregation. Yada, yada, yada. Or the United States could have accepted permanent demand. So he's basically he's putting himself up on Mount Rushmore. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. He's saying, what's he
well,
saying?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that he's definitely elevating his own status in the history books and our fight against terrorism as something akin to those types of things. And personally, I do not think the war on terrorism is the same as those things. I don't find the parallels between. I know that a lot of bloggers would. I know a lot of people would, but I do not see them as the same things.
Yeah, like I said, there's no, we can never win the war on terrorism because terrorism has been around since day one. I mean,
terrorism is an idea.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. Yeah. I mean, these other things were. These other things were a little bit more clearly defined. The war on terrorism, we're not gonna defeat terrorism. You can't defeat a tactic. The tactic is always going to be around. And the way that he was framing it tonight is basically like, it seemed like we're not gonna stop until every single country in the world is a democracy.
So that means we're gonna invade all these countries that have dictators or governments that we don't accept, so we're gonna he's advocating our military be used to invade all these countries, huh?
He said it wasn't all military. It's not all a military solution, but mm-hmm. That option is on the table, and we have a big hammer and we're going to leverage that. And don't be surprised if, in the future, we drop that hammer again.
Hmm.
When kind of Iraq is possibly forgotten a little bit, in 10 years, and then another person who kind of believes in more of the neocons ideology comes in, you might see another war like this.
Hmm.
I don't know.
All in all,
it was a good speech for Bush.
Yeah.
But I also think that it's going to give the other side, I think it's going to give Democrats, and I think it's going to give some independents pause too. Because there were a lot of signs and a lot of hints to things that we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
So.
Now, when we got a few minutes left, now how do you think this is going to play out with the Republicans in 2006? We got the midterm elections. Is this going to help them at all, or is this kind of like, it's an obligatory speech at the beginning of the year, and it's over?
I think it's an obligatory speech. I think mm-hmm. this will give them a lot of talking points then to play off of.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it gives Democrats a pretty fertile field to play off of as well. We're talking essentially about war without end. Somebody saying that this global struggle is the most important that we've ever faced.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least suggesting it. Now, I think that it divided this issue back again into more of a partisan issue.
Mm-hmm.
The cut and run people, even though Murtha has an idea, and even though people who advocate pulling out of Iraq sooner rather than later and setting a timetable still have ideas. Now, I don't agree with them, but they still have ideas. Bush framed it in, such a way where it's like, that's a failure. Done. That's not going to happen, And, that's a failed way of thinking, and it's not planning. It's just, that characterization is wrong. I think Republicans will definitely be able to grab a lot of talking points from this. Whether the American people are fatigued by that type of talk, I think they might be. I think that's why they elected Bush in 2004, because he made the war on terrorism a partisan issue, and now people don't necessarily trust his leadership in the war on terrorism much anymore.
Well,
he doesn't have a majority, shown in the polls, and the polls can change.
True.
And I think he might get a little bit of a bump after this speech, but I don't know if it's going to help help his party in the fall.
Yeah. Now, man, we got like a minute left or so. Now, who was up in the gallery? Because I was on my way here. Anybody in the gallery that stood out to you as a surprise or sitting up there with Barbara Bush?
There was a Marine.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, Sean, I always hate people being used as props.
Yeah.
And I don't ever like that. I know that every president does that, but yeah. I just wish they would stop.
Yeah.
A guy who was killed in Iraq, and his family was up there.
Mm.
And I think the fact that Bush is using this guy's letter back to his family to kind of justify the Iraq War is, I don't know. I think that's cheap. I think that he can make his point a lot more clear and a lot more stronger, and not pull somebody else's story into it. But that's just what politicians do. So that was really the only. It wasn't much of a surprise, but I was a little bit kind of like dismayed because he pulled these people in there and was talking about this Marine who had died in Iraq.
Mm.
But as far as like anybody. None that I could see, really.
Really? What stations did you watch? Did you watch CNN or?
No, I actually watched Fox.
Fox.
I wanted to see how they treated it. Their pre State of the Union talk was, Bush is kind of he's not on the ropes. It's been a really tough year for him.
Yeah.
What's he going to talk about? I think it was a pretty fair shake before the State of the Union.
Hmm.
Then our local affiliate cut out, like their audio just cut out.
Wow.
So I had to switch over to ABC.
Hmm.
And then immediately after that, they were talking about the whole addicted to oil thing and how that's surprising from Bush. But, I mean, with the developments in Iran, I think what he's doing is he's priming people to be like, we really need this. And then if Iran goes bad and oil goes up to $90 a barrel, then he's like, okay, we really, really, really remember when I was talking about this in the State of the Union?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, And I think it's a very, very good move by him.
Yeah.
Plant the seed now. We're addicted to oil. And if oil starts to shoot up, it's like, now we really need it. Do you see why we need it? Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. So that frames that particular issue more on the Republican side, which is pretty interesting, environmentalism, on the Republican side. I think people will see through that because of their record on environmentalism and alternate energy, but, we'll see.
Very good. Well, Justin, we'll let you go. End of our segment. It's nice talking to you. Thank you for the special State of the Union event here. So we'll see you, 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. All right. Thank you very much, sir.
All right, cheers. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. And that was Justin from the Donkelvin Centrist Political Blog, whatever the hell it's called. No, Donkelvin Centrist Blog, it's called, a political blog. Very good. And he also guest blogs on Joel Gandelman's The Moderate Voice, so excellent. Excellent blogger. Been reading his posts over in Joe's blog. Excellent. Very succinct. It's a centrist, so he kind of lets both sides have it, but very, very down the middle of the road, I'd say. So, but and now we should be joined like a minute or so by Chip from PoliticalSports.com with another view on it. And also he'll give us the rundown of the Democrat response because, when Bush gets done, I mean, it means the Democrats will get up and speak, and they chose the new governor of Virginia, Kane, to give the speech. Is that Kane from, is that Michelle Forbes giving a speech? No, it's a governor, a male Kane, a Governor Kane, Tom Kane, I think his name is. And so hopefully he'll give us a little bit of the Democratic response to this. So we're anxious to see what the Democrats think, you know what I mean? Because, Bush's speech, I've been referring to as a state of delusion, you know what I'm saying? His administration is in shambles. We got the deficit shooting through the roof, the debt shooting through the roof. We got this war, endless war going on. And all of a sudden, and at the same time, it's like the video of the month club with UBL. We get a video, there he is talking, and there's the other guy, Al Zarqawi, speaking. You know what I mean? Now he's got a black backdrop. It's like watching American Idol or America's home videos here. We got these terrorists. Why can't we find these people? I don't understand this. We can find a speeding hearse carrying Coretta Scott King's body into the United States from Mexico. How come we can't trace the damn UBL and the other Al Qaeda, honchos in Afghanistan or in Pakistan, wherever the hell they're at? I don't understand this. They get these videos. Why can't they? Why don't they put a CIA agent? We're so good at the spying business, huh? Why don't we have a CIA agent right there to watch who comes in and out of Al Jazeera's studio with these tapes? I don't know. It's probably more complicated than I made it, but oh well. And I think Chip is with us from the. There we go. And we are joined by Chip Spear of the PoliticalSports.com blog. Chip, are you there with us, sir?
I am, Sean. How are you this evening?
Wonderful. How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
Yes, I don't know if you saw that. Bush ended his speech right before I came on the air, so he wanted to get out of the way on my way here. He wanted to, you know, cut into my airtime here.
Well, yeah, I know he was doing it. I said, geez, he's running a little late there.
He ended it right on time.
To start your discussion before you even have time to think about what was going on in his speech.
Well, I sat in the car for a while. Oh, yeah, who's going to the Super Bowl? That's the big question. Who gives a damn about the State of the Union?
That's right. Well, you know, there's the big game, and then there's the really big game.
Who do you think's going to win the Super Bowl first? We'll break up the monotonous a little bit. Who,
all right. I think the Steelers are on a roll.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'm not so sure that, you know, I originally grew up in Cleveland, and during the Browns era, when the Browns were actually really good before the Pittsburgh Steelers were anything, and the Steelers were always the enemy, and as far as I'm concerned, they're still the enemy.
Really?
Even if I don't live in Cleveland anymore, I don't like the Steelers, but I really respect them. They're a really great team, and boy, they've been really on a roll for about the past 6-8 weeks or something. They just seem to be pretty much unstoppable.
We'll see what happens. Sunday's the big day, big game. Now,
I'm going to watch it.
You know what? I mentioned Super Bowl on the air. I wonder if we'll get sued now for mentioning that.
Well, maybe.
Oh, well.
Yeah, we never know until it happens. Maybe there'll be an upset. But yeah, I think the Steelers look pretty tough.
Yeah, they got the deep pockets here, LV Rocks. They can afford a couple million-dollar fine, can't they?
From
one big game to the other big game. Now, were you able to watch the Democratic response?
Yeah, I did see almost all of it.
Really?
I must say, it wasn't too long.
No.
It was fairly pointed. A couple of things really stuck out in that Alan, I guess it was really stressing competency and management, fiscal responsibility, and working across the aisle. He brought up a number of situations or specific examples where things were achieved by working on both sides of the aisles, working with Democrats and Republicans together to find solutions to a lot of problems, many of them brought about by incompetency in the federal government, which I thought was pretty interesting. I mean, he brought forth a number of examples, including the No Child Left Behind program, the Medicaid funding, where the feds are cutting a lot of funds for Medicaid and health care, leaving it up to the states to pick up the burden. He's talking about various other education policies, specifically with No Child Left Behind. It's been an ongoing issue about the feds not providing enough funding to cover the costs, so the states have had to pick up a lot of the burdens. That's been something that's been going on for quite some time, but he brought that up once again. And like Bush, who also did stress reaching across the aisle, Alan was making it a real point of his proposals that the best way to solve a lot of these problems is through bipartisan initiatives. You certainly can't fault Bush for saying something like that. I mean, it's clear that over the next 3 years that he's going to need some help from Democrats. However, if you look at his past history, he hasn't acted in any manner which would indicate that he's willing to be the one that compromises. He says, "I'll work with you guys just as long as you do what I say." You know, that was my emotional reaction to that.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, because I'm on Yahoo News now, kind of picking around a little bit, and it's like some of the reaction to the Bush's State of the Union was agitated, and what else? Democrats on Bush says there is a better way, because the governor of Virginia gave the speech, right, Timothy Kaine?
Yes, yeah. And his sort of catchphrase was, "There is a better way." Uh-huh. He repeated that a number of times. And I think that it's a very good strategy from a Democratic standpoint, because people are dissatisfied, clearly, with the direction that Bush has taken. Numerous polls, whether it's CNN or the Wall Street Journal and ABC, have all indicated that people are dissatisfied with the direction that Bush is taking now. And if the Democrats come out and say, look, we have a better way to do this, they're indicating that they want a change of the direction, which is playing into these fears that people currently have.
Yeah, the Democrats, like I said, they have to come out swinging, but not just swinging against Bush, but swinging and also bring their own counter proposals with them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And Alan went down in a number of examples and tried to pinpoint state programs that Democrats have initiated, things that have worked. Looking at whether it's the education issues or the health care issues, he specifically was talking about Democrats and how successful they've been, but only been successful by working with Republicans. Again, another good strategy on the Democratic part to try to break down this real antagonism that exists between Republicans and Democrats in Washington.
Yes, that's right. As I said, they have to go issue by issue and peel back all this BS that Bush has been laying out. You know, Iraq is a mess. What, 2,400 of our troops are dead, were killed over there. How many thousands are injured every year? We went through that list last week about the troops getting injured over there. I mean, it's crazy. And each issue, you got to go peel it back, you know, hit them issue by issue and pound them with common sense, you know. The deficit of debt shooting through the roof, peel that back. You know, who's going to pay this debt? You know, trillions and trillions of debt. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, Alan did talk about that as well. He said that he thought that it was really bad that we're leaving this huge debt to our children, and talked about the fiscal irresponsibility of the Bush administration, the permanent tax cuts that are increasing the deficit. Though to counter that, Bush did say that if we keep on our current track, that we're going to cut the deficit in half, 12 or something of that nature.
Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, he's not even going to be in office. You know, he's only got 2 years left. Now, what do you think? Now, I say the lame duck of him start kicking in the day he gave a speech that he won, when he won the election. When he said he won political capital and he's going to spend it, I think the Congress went up in arms, and he's been a lame duck ever since. What do you think?
Well, I think that to a certain extent that's true. People will only respond to him if they feel that they personally can use him in a political standpoint. The Republicans are only going to stand with him when he is an asset. When he becomes a liability to them, like, for example, in the November elections, they're going to start to distance themselves from him in specific circumstances. Now, you could see in the wiretap issue that a number of Republicans started to move further away from him. The Abramoff scandal, the same thing is occurring. I think that they're going to be very careful with how closely they align themselves with Bush over the next 10 months, and it will be dependent upon where he's standing in the polls. And this is part of the lame duck thing, because they're only dependent upon him to a certain degree from here on out. Certainly after the next November elections, their responsibility to him is going to be next to nothing. So he's going to find it very difficult to get a lot of support. Those Republicans are going to be looking toward the next nominee for some type of support. So they're going to be kind of a bit adrift, I think.
Yeah. And then I also want quotes from the Democratic response, because I got a lot of listeners who were listening to my program when I started, and I haven't a chance to hear the Democratic response. Governor Kane from Virginia said on Iraq, he said that the administration gave the public incorrect information about the reasons for invading Iraq, and then failed to give troops the best intelligence or body armor. Now he said Bush wants to decrease National Guard and reserve troop levels and further reduce military and veterans benefits. That's ridiculous. He's doing all this behind-the-scenes stuff. You know, we want the best for the troops, and in the back, they're peeling away the benefits and everything, and the body armor.
Well, that from a strategic standpoint, he has repeatedly called for various programs, initiatives, policies that he then does not back up with actions, either with funding or with departments or personnel, whether it's the war in Iraq, money going to Katrina relief. You can go down a whole list of things where he has really cut back government response in innumerable ways. Mm. So it makes one wonder, and I think this is the problem that he is having, is that talk is cheap, actions are expensive. He says a lot of things that sound good. He's almost a messiah in a certain way about this march of freedom throughout the world, yet he doesn't really back it up supporting the troops with proper armor. And if you look at the Walter Reed Army Hospital, it was on CBS News tonight, they were talking about guys who don't get support they need for rehabilitation. And I don't know if you listen to Don Imus, but he's been on a kick for the past, I don't know, 10 to 12 months trying to raise money for veterans who are going through rehabilitation that have lost their legs or their arms or something of that sort. Now, why is he, or why are private people doing something that the federal government should be, you know, first in line for? These are our troops. We need to do the right thing. Clearly not the right thing.
No.
So when people see that, they start to question the validity of what he's saying. And I think that's why his poll numbers are where they are.
Yeah, well, I mean, here we are in the Keynes speech. He says, you know, about the Iraq, our commitment to win the war on terrorism compels us to ask this question: are the president's policies the best way to win this war? You know,
right.
You know, our arguments can be made on either side, but you're looking at it right now, you have to say no, because, you know, it's a mess over there. Like I said, we're in the middle of a civil war, and nobody's going to acknowledge it, and we're sitting ducks. We're sitting in the middle of this, you know, for who knows how much longer, until Bush gets out of office, huh?
Yeah, he says on the one hand we need to defeat terrorism, but then he's cutting funding for the National Guard, the reserves.
Mm-hmm.
He's reducing military and veteran benefits.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a contradiction just within his own speech.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are things that I think people catch up to. They look at and they start to scratch their heads. And obviously, there are people that are really paying attention, but then eventually it starts to trickle down to the people at large, who start to really question what he's doing, because it manifests itself in ways that show incompetency, whether it's how the war in Iraq has been implemented, or how we are responding, or how the federal government responded to the Hurricane Katrina disaster.
True. I mean, the complete collapse of the government's response to Katrina, and then something else came out. What was that? With the FEMA, a couple of the FEMA people were indicted, right? Did you see that story earlier in the week? I don't know where I read it from. That the some FEMA officers got in cahoots with a caterer to overinflate the amount of people this caterer was serving in order to get more money from the government, and then they agreed to split the money. Two FEMA officers were arrested because this caterer, you know, after a while he turned them in. I mean, it goes over to the problem that there's no accountability for this Katrina mess.
Well, you know, that sounds remarkably similar to what was going on with Halliburton overcharging for feeding all the soldiers in Iraq.
Exactly.
It's the same exact thing. I listened to a little bit of the commentary afterward.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to CBS, and they talked about the president laying out a grand vision in his foreign policy and his domestic policy. He advocated, you know, what, some very good things. You know, he was advocating for energy independence, this addiction to oil thing. I will point out that I heard on the news earlier today, or read it, that he has mentioned something having to do with addiction to oil in three of his last four State of the Union addresses, so this is not something particularly new. The idea of competitiveness in schools and with our kids is something that also has been mentioned numerous times, yet it doesn't seem to have been really implemented in any pragmatic way.
True. Well, here it is on the analysis of the speech. He says, calling for less dependency on foreign oil is a State of the Union evergreen. Bush has done so in every address. So you're right there. He's mentioned that every address. mm-hmm. about that. You know, that's what I understand. When I see, you know, put money into this science, like, I don't know if you listened, Justin was on 2 weeks ago, and he said that there's a technology where you can turn coal into fuel for cars, but it's underfunded. You know, why don't they plow some of this money into, you know, research and technology to these alternative fuels?
Well, he did call for a 20% increase in research for alternative fuels. However, we don't have any idea. He didn't mention a number
exactly.
there. So what does that mean? Is there currently $600 million being allocated for research in that? If you increase that 20%, that's only another $120 million, which is nothing. What we need to do, obviously, is spend tens of billions of dollars on research mm-hmm. to try to develop this or have companies doing it or a combination of, you know, the lunar program when Kennedy was advocating getting to the moon. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a real synthesis of government and private industry to develop the technology and the capabilities to do that. Mm-hmm. We need a government initiative that's much the same. A 20% increase in research, I don't think is going to really cut it.
No. Well, I mean, he advocates that, and like you said, he underfunds these things. He says, oh, I forget, something, some other program he's going to fund it. I think it's a No Child Left Behind business, you know, and
right.
then he underfunded it. He says one thing, oh, I'm going to give $100 billion to this, ends up being like $6 billion, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think a couple of things that I think are really important to keep in mind is who he's targeting this speech to. I mean, he has a certain group of people that are just going to agree with him no matter what, and then a sizable number of people who are not. He's playing to those independent swing voters, and he's trying to present something that's going to appeal to them to get them on his side and the Republican side. And when he stresses things like this addiction to oil, they listen to that. When you're listening to a speech, there's so much information, it's almost like a kitchen sink type thing. You throw mm-hmm. everything in, including the kitchen sink, and some of it's going to stick. When he says we need energy independence, we're addicted to oil, we're going to increase our funding for research, people pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they really remember, or they're even going to follow up tomorrow and read the 20%. What is that 20%? Where is it going? How are we going to do it? Who's going to do it? Is it going to be the government? Is it going to be Exxon or another Enron or somebody that's supposedly doing that work? You know, the devil's there in the detail. People are going to respond to that. They're also going to respond to that fear factor. Terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Iran, Iraq, Osama bin Laden, you know, coming out with these statements. They see Hamas, you know, and they see him standing tough. We are not backing down.
Yeah.
And he's very good at presenting that tough front, and it appeals to people because they want somebody who appears strong. Whether he actually can follow up or not seems to be questionable.
Yeah, well,
but he gives that appearance.
Actually, I think they said this is the he didn't mention Osama bin Laden by name last year at the State Union. I think this is his first time in 2 years he's mentioned UBL by name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, he with the on the home front, with the economic standpoint, he said he proposes to train 70,000 high school teachers to lead advanced placement courses in math and science. Hallelujah. That I agree on. I think he should train 100,000 high school teachers. You know, we need more teachers. And bring 30,000 math and science professionals to teach in classrooms and give early help to students who struggle with math. Absolutely. As I said, he's got to jump on the bagwagon about having a 12-month school year and everything else. But I like that idea. Almost like Clinton's, what was that, the 100,000 cops
mm-hmm.
proposal?
Mm-hmm.
This is similar. It's 70 high school teachers and 30,000 math and science. They would be 100,000 school teachers. So,
Sounds good. I don't think that you'll find anybody to disagree with that.
No.
Everybody, whether they're Republican or Democrat or independent or libertarian, you know, they'll say this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how's he going to fund it?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't mention anything about additional monies to fund that program and how it's going to be implemented in local school districts.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
On the surface, absolutely. Let's do it. I'm behind him 100%.
Yeah.
But let's get some more details about how that's actually going to be implemented.
Exactly. I mean, where is this money going to come from? We're already, we're going to raise the debt ceiling to 8-point-something trillion, and the deficit's going through the roof?
Well, probably more than that after we make the tax cuts permanent.
Oh.
We can't forget about that little issue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, China and the Asian countries own so much of our debt. I mean, I don't know. It gives me a headache. Think about that. It's madness, isn't it?
Well, I do. I think so. But I'm the type of person that wants to make sure that I have the money in order to pay for whatever I need, rather than continually spending the way that he is and insisting that tax cuts for the wealthy are actually going to help the entire country. It up to this point, it has not worked.
I actually have a question for you from the chat room. Let me see. Someone rebooting what? Let me see. Oh, will this speech effectively reboot this administration?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I don't think so
and
either.
And again, I think that it's always possible, but he would almost have to transform himself as a person and what he believes and how he respects and works with Congress in order for that to happen. I think that there's been so much bitterness and anger that's developed over the past 5 years. He's still stonewalling about releasing information and pictures about Abramoff.
Yeah. You know,
why was Abramoff in the White House? He talks about being bipartisan, yet he refuses to open himself up to that or even talk about that or admit anything. You know, there were no pictures. He doesn't know who he is, according to Scott McCullen, and then you find out that there were all these meetings that he was in the White House, Abramoff was in the White House all this time. And I mean, if he wants a certain amount of bipartisanship, he's got to make some type of gesture. Republicans have cut the Democrats out of so many things over the past 5 years and acted in a manner which has been pretty arrogant. I think it's turned a lot of Democrats off, and they want to see a gesture on the part of Republicans, including Bush, to heal the wounds. Bush can't just get up there and say, oh, let's work together, and then go on doing the same things that he's been doing and expect a different result.
True. I see another question from a chat room for you. They're asking is, will the speech do anything to help the GOP? And it's, I think, probably referring to their midterm elections.
I think it remains to be seen. I don't know that there's anything specific in there that's solid enough to say that it's going to help them. There are a lot of good ideas, of wanting to help education, solve the problem, bring the troops home from Iraq. If that does happen, if there is a major a movement of those troops home, that would definitely help Republicans in November. If there's some easing of tension with Iran, that will probably help. If there's some substantial acts that get a lot of publicity down in New Orleans, whether reopening of schools or a lot of blacks moving back in, that would probably help him. Otherwise, I think that the Republicans are going to have a hard time. About the speech that's going to help them.
No, and then are there any proposals that Bush made that will actually make it to his desk? I don't know. I like to see that teacher thing make it to his desk. That's one thing I like to see make it, but I don't know about anything else. Do you?
Well, that proposal to increase funding by 20% for research and alternative technologies, energy technologies. I don't know the numbers, but that certainly makes sense. I think that's something that everybody would agree on. Something like that will definitely have some serious movement in Congress. All the education stuff, I think, will be helpful. And I think that people will start looking at ways of dealing with some of these Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid issues of funding. There's no question that it is a problem and that something will have to be done at some point. What that is, I don't know. But I think there'll be some preliminary steps that are made. It's in the interest of both parties to start to address that.
I still think about everything he proposed. Like a lot of them, I remember Clinton used to give all these speeches, and you know, I want this and this and this and this, and then it turns out he only gets like one or two of his ideas on his desk. You know, I mean, because with earlier in the week he said, Bush said something. He has a good working relationship with the leaders of both houses of Congress. I'm like, what the hell? They're both members of your party. You better have a good relationship with them. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think that he has a particularly good relationship with any of the Democrats.
He's making it sound like he's, he makes it sound like he's adversarial with the leaders of Congress, and it's his own party. It's ridiculous. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, he has very little respect for people outside of his inner circle, mm-hmm. it seems. I mean, his actions have indicated that over the past few years. He's very closed with Cheney and Rumsfeld and Scooter, Libby, and those guys have all maintained a very bunker-like mentality in everything that they've done. And I don't see that changing. There would have to be a change in him and a change in Cheney. And unless there was some huge sort of metaphysical, psychological shift in his thinking, I think he's going to still perceive people in the same way. Oh. And that's going to mean that he's going to act in the same way.
Absolutely. Well, Chip, we'll let you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for being on the special State of the Union event here on Subject to Discussion.
Yeah, it was great. I just want to say stop by my website, politicalsports.com.
Absolutely.
We had our, we should just say that had our political player of the week this week was the leader of Hamas for a big win last week in the elections, and our fabulous fumble of the week was George W.
Uh-oh.
But I'll let you guys go on and check out All why.
Right. PoliticalSports.com, and we'll talk to you next week, sir.
Yes.
All right, thank you very much.
Have a great week.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.
And tonight, that was Chip from PoliticalSports.com, and we'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll have Philip Nguyen, who is the co-founder of blogcritics.org. There you go, I got it right for once. And then in the last half hour of the program, it'll be Koenig Rules with his State of Galactica address. And we'll be back in just a few minutes. Thank you very much.
Attention, attention. See that the humans remain entertained until the end.
Ah, thank you, Centurion. I forgot that kid told me to thank the Centurions more, so I gotta thank the Centurions for their proper introduction. Thank you.
By your command.
There you go. And I am the Imperious Leader of Subject to Discussion, the staff of 20 in the back, but I'm their leader. And I thank Consolar. I didn't thank him for producing the program again this week. Thank you, Consolar.
By your command.
There he is. And now we'll be joined by Philip Nguyen from blogcritics.org. Philip, are you there, sir?
Yes, hello, Sean.
Ah, very good connection. I love good connections here. It's always good for a talk show when you have good connections. I appreciate it.
All right.
AT&T is a godsend, I'm telling you. Or Sprint, excuse me, Sprint. Whatever, you know. So now I'll give you the floor. You give your blogcritics.org State of the Union.
Sure,
so I'll go, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, Vice President Cheney, members of Congress.
Yeah, no, let me introduce you properly.
We've already heard that one.
Let me introduce you properly. Mr. Speaker, the co-founder of blogcritics.org, Philip Nguyen. There you go. Go ahead.
Thanks, Sean.
You're welcome.
The state of the site is strong, I guess, is what we're supposed to say. Have they ever said that it was anything but strong? I just wonder.
I don't think so.
Maybe in a time of war you might expect a possible weak Union? No. Blogcritics.org is pretty much firing on all cylinders. We actually just yesterday posted our 40,000th article.
Wow.
So we now have 40,082 articles from 1,326 different writers over the course of the last 3 years, 5 months, and a couple weeks.
Wow. Congratulations.
We're nearing the 300,000 comment mark. We've had, at last check, 292,269 comments. Hmm. And I took the time to delete the most recent spam, so I'm pretty sure those are all legitimate comments and no spam or anything. Things are going well. We've got a lot of active writers. We've got a lot of active visitors. We're always looking for more of both. We welcome, of course, all of the wonderful audience of Subject to Discussion to stop by the site. I actually remembered to write an article highlighting tonight's show. I forget some weeks, but when I'm the guest, for some reason, I remember.
Ah.
And the really exciting thing, actually, is that blogcritics.org has just launched a new a site. We're now a network. We're the Blog Critics Network. Mm. It's a network of two sites. We do have more sites planned for the future, but right now the new site is Desi Critics. So in addition to blogcritics.org bringing you the best of superior bloggers from around the world, we now have Desi Critics, D-E-S-I, critics.org.
Mm.
That brings you the best of what are called Desi writers. Now, Desi writers are basically writers from South Asia, meaning, actually, Desi is, it's a colloquial term for people from South Asia. New York Times reporter described it as a Hindi version of homeboy or homegirl. But basically, it's people from Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Nepal, all those South Asian countries, a lot of people from India, of course, as well as people around the world from the diaspora that have spread out from India, Pakistan, Bhutan, et cetera, et cetera. And so over there, we launched the site on January 26th, which is Republic Day in India, the day they commemorate the enactment of the Constitution of India, and we've already had 165 articles by 76 different writers.
Wow.
And 567 comments, last I checked. So the state of that site is actually very strong right out of the gate. And things are looking good for all of the sites. I think they're looking a lot better for us than they are for Bush.
Really? Now, Mr. Speaker, can I interrupt with a question?
Sure, absolutely. Go right ahead. I'll just wrap up. And
okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Answer your question, Sam.
Now, you know, BlogCritics, because we get a lot of new listeners all the time. How long has BlogCritics been around?
3 years, 5 months, and a couple weeks.
There you go. You can continue, sir. I didn't mean to interrupt your speech, but there you go. I had a question from the chat room, so I answered it. Very good.
No problem.
Go ahead.
Well, that's basically it. I mean, we're always looking for new writers. We're always looking for new readers, of course. We try to bring the best in on a variety of different sections. We've got articles on music, books, TV, film, culture, pop culture, of course. That's what we specialize in here on this show. Mm-hmm. We also have politics, sports, gaming, science, and technology. And Desi Critics has a slightly different breakdown of what they cover, but it all amounts to the same thing. We try to touch on a little bit of everything.
Hmm. Very good. Now, because you just launched at Desi Critics. Now, that has nothing to do with Desi Arnaz, does it?
No, definitely not.
Because Desi Arnaz Jr. lives out here. He lives out in Boulder City. Runs a movie theater out here, so I bumped into him a couple times. But I just thought I'd ask that. You know what I mean? No, I'm kidding. So now with you launched a new site. Now it is doing real well. Now, what? You know, actually, I had a question. What are you're looking at Blog Critics as it stands now versus when it started? What is the biggest strength of BlogCritics.org?
Oh wow. I guess I would just have to say our biggest strength has been and probably always will be the writers. We really do have some fantastic writers. We've got a team of editors that works so that, in fact, all articles submitted to Blog Critics go through an editing process where they have to be published by an editor, and among those editors are actually people who do that sort of thing for a living. So writers for Blog Critics really get kind of some free editing work like you'd normally have to go to a magazine to get, and the readers get the benefits of having pre-edited content.
Hmm. Now which section of Blog Critics is your strongest? Is it music? Is it books? Is it TV? You know, which one do you think gets the most comments or the most response? Do you feel, is it politics, especially like tonight probably would be because of the State of the Union?
Tonight I'm guessing politics is going to rule the fresh comments page for a while. I would say music has historically been the strongest. The strongest. We started with mostly music and kind of added other things one at a time or two at a time. So it still tends to be pretty strong. Politics obviously generates a lot of discussion, but I think sometimes that's all heat, no light. I'm not sure how much actually gets accomplished in the politics section. And, TV film is probably another section that's way up there.
Really?
We only recently launched the sports and gaming and science and technology section, splitting them off from other sections. And so we're working on building those up especially. We've had a lot of new writers sign up to write about science and technology, so I'm pretty hopeful that, you know, by the time we do another State of the Union speech in a year, that'll be one of our most popular sections.
Really? Now looking ahead, now where do you see? Is there any weak spot with the Blog Critics? Is there an area you wish was stronger? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I do wish that we had more.
Hmm. Really?
more writers, more readers. More editors, a little bit of everything. I know that we're planning on launching a number of new sites in this network. If it was only ever going to be two sites, I think we'd be more than a little bit pretentious calling it a network. But it's two sites now, and within a couple weeks, I expect it to be three, and then four, and probably by this time next year, maybe a dozen different sites, all related.
So like you say, blogcritics.org would be like a network, and then off that network you'll have several different sites where people can go to for, you know, like science or
Right. So some of the sites we're talking about will be kind of a highlight of the very best. Like we'll take the very best music articles from one day at Blog Critics and post them to a dedicated music site. Others are entirely new. I mean, Desi Critics isn't something we split off really that existed. We took a few, basically the management team, we were talking about what to do, and one of the guys said, you know, I really think that South Asia or India and that area deserves a lot of attention, and we do have some writers with interest there, with roots there, so we thought if we could get some of those people to come on as editors and work with us, that it'd be worth doing. And sure enough, we got a guy, Aman Lamba, who's currently the publisher of that, and a few other existing writers to move over there. So that's new and didn't really come out of what we were already doing. And there were a couple other sites. We're really strongly considering a celebrity gossip site.
Really?
Those are popular, and because it really hurts some of our writers to sit back and kind of not be allowed to post really snarky celebrity gossip within the current guidelines, editorial guidelines.
Actually, I'm on DesiCritics.org right now, and it's still, I like the design of both of the sites. I mean, I'm on the, of course, I drift towards the politics page here, but you know, there's an article in there, today, Enron India. You've got mail. I mean, it's really, I'm amazed how, since this just launched, the amount of articles in here already. Congratulations. It's really impressive.
Yeah, it's been really, really, really exciting. If all of our new site launches go even three quarters as well as this one, or even half as well as this one, I think we'll be ecstatic.
Really? That's good.
Now, yeah, it's really good.
I want to talk about pop culture and... let me see here. Now, you said Craig Ferguson's father died. I must have missed this. He did a eulogy on his show towards his father?
That's exactly right. Huh. We've got one of our editors, in fact, tends to blog nearly every episode of The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. She's a stalker, frankly. I think I've mentioned her before.
Mm-hmm.
And over the weekend, his father, Robert Ferguson, passed away. And he'd taken off the previous week, and people kind of wondered why.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually dedicated last night's show to his father, and the entire hour was a eulogy. He talked about him, still managed to, you know, tell jokes, keep it humorous. He had his guests on, Dr. Drew, Amy Yazbeck, Wicked Tinkers, and they all basically focused on the theme of a man who had obviously meant a lot to his son. And people, it's written up in the USA Today and obviously written up at Blog Critics as one of the most moving, you know, hours of television in a long time. And this from the Late Late Show of all places.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, now, what happened to Shadow Stevens? Now, he was supposed to be his co-host or something, right?
Well, there was that story going around, and then it ended up falling apart. And I believe that our stalker is working on setting up an interview with Shadow.
There you go.
To get all the details, and hopefully we'll have that available soon.
Very good. And then also you want to talk about the big news today was the Academy Award nominations came out. Any surprises at the Academy Awards?
Not a huge one. I will say, a number of weeks ago, I think I made a prediction about Brokeback Mountain. You and your producer might remember.
Mm-hmm.
I expressed skepticism about it earning more than a certain number. A number that I must say it, like, passed weeks ago and is well on its way to doubling and will probably triple by the time it's finished.
Yeah, it made $100 million, didn't it?
Well, not yet, but it's...
No?
It's on its way, and I think I originally predicted it wouldn't do more than about $30 million. So I was way wrong on that one.
Unbelievable.
And sure enough, it's nominated for a few. I mean, Heath Ledger's nominated for Best Leading Man. Jake Gyllenhaal is nominated for Best Supporting Actor. In fact, Michelle Williams is nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely garnered a few of them, including, you know, achievement in cinematography, achievement in directing. I always expected it, I guess, to pick up a number of awards, but I've been astounded at its box office performance.
Yeah, we have some of your little talking points now. Brokeback Mountain received 8 nominations this year, which
That's
is
right.
incredible for a movie like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, Best Picture. Now, look at the best picture. You have Brokeback Mountain, Capote, Crash, Good Night, and Good Luck, and Munich. Who do you think is the leading candidate to walk out with the Academy Award from those choices there? That's going to be rough.
Yeah, it's really hard to say. I mean, the Screen Actors Guild just gave their equivalent award to Crash, which a lot of people think sets it up to be the winner. I think the Oscars tend to have a little bit more... they're more prone to bandwagon jumping. I think that when you see 8 nominations for Brokeback Mountain, it's really Brokeback Mountain's to lose at that point.
Really?
So as much as, I mean, I enjoyed the heck out of Munich. I just recently saw that one myself.
How was it?
And obviously a lot of people are rooting for Crash. I really think Brokeback Mountain's probably going to take that one.
Well, it seems like it's the darling of the Hollywood and everything right now. Now, you saw Munich. How was it?
I really enjoyed it. It was, you know, it had the capacity to be disturbing, I guess, at parts, but that was somewhat the point. And I think a lot of people have gotten upset at Spielberg for not delivering easy answers, especially because Spielberg, you know, has kind of made a career of delivering easy answers, I guess, or at least somewhat superficial treatments of things. But in this case, he walked the hard road. The book he was adapting for this movie, you know, it didn't paint a very competent picture of this Mossad team following the Munich Olympics. It didn't really paint a positive portrayal of either Black September, the Palestinian terrorists, or this secret Mossad team sent to assassinate members or planners of the Black September terrorist attacks. And, you know, I guess people have criticized it for taking one side or the other. I mean, I think it doesn't tend to take either side. I think it's somewhat against both sides. And to me, the biggest, the most important scene in the movie, or the one that stands out in my mind, was at the very, very end, the Eric Bana character is dealing with the Jeffrey Rush character. He's trying to get him to come back to Israel. Eric Bana is basically, he's settled in Brooklyn. He says, no way, I'm out. You know, he hasn't decided if what he's done was right or wrong or anything, but he's questioning whether it was effective or what. Mm-hmm. And in the background, as he walks away, as Jeffrey Rush walks away, they simply can't agree. In the background, in 1973, you see the World Trade Center towers across the water.
Wow.
And it's just kind of a reminder that this has been going on for a while.
Yeah.
And do we ever win? Do we ever make progress? So in that sense, it was almost bleak in its, in its outlook, but I still thought it was a very, very challenging and enjoyable movie.
Yeah, actually, well, Shadow One, he's one of our listeners from the U.K., he's saying Munich was excellent. And then Night Sky, also from the UK. You got a lot of international listeners here. They said, why the hell is Jake Gyllenhaal only up for Best Supporting Actor? Jake's a huge star. Why was Jake Gyllenhaal?
He's apparently a huge part of the film. I still haven't caught it. I'm sure I'll catch it on DVD. But that's a good question. Everything that I've seen has considered Heath Ledger the lead actor and Jake Gyllenhaal the supporting actor. And I've seen sometimes where it seems like co-stars, one or the other, is treated. And I don't know if that has to do with Academy rules or, you know, Screen Actors Guild rules, but it seems to be universally accepted among groups of critics and award shows that Heath Ledger is the lead actor and Gyllenhaal is the supporting actor.
Interesting. And then Best Actress, everybody's saying this is pretty much a giveaway for Reese Witherspoon for Walk the Line.
It ought to be.
Yeah, because Judi Dench, she's up. Felicity Huffman for Transamerica. Keira Knightley for Pride and Prejudice. Charlize Theron for North Country. And Reese Witherspoon. They're all saying that Reese is going to walk away with this award, huh?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I wouldn't mind giving an award to Keira Knightley just because. But frankly, I mean, Reese Witherspoon definitely deserves that award, I think, over probably the other four.
Really?
Yeah, she was incredible.
Yeah. I
haven't seen all five of those movies, but, I mean, she was fantastic.
And then Best Supporting Actor, you have George Clooney for Syriana. I thought it was an excellent movie. I like Syriana. Matt Dillon for, Crash? Paul Giamatti for Cinderella Man, Jake Gyllenhaal for Brokeback Mountain, and William Hurt for History of Violence. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's going to be a hard one to call. And George Clooney has done something that no one's ever done before in this award. He's actually up for original screenplay. He's up for performance by an actor, but he's also up for Good Night and Good Luck, which he was a producer on, and it's up for Best Picture and Achievement in Cinematography. So he's actually involved with two Oscar-nominated movies, and that's pretty, as an actor in one and a producer, I think, in another. So that's unusual.
Yeah. Do we think he's going to get the award? I mean, that's going to be a hard choice between these guys here. William Hurt, maybe, because he's been in the business for a while, History of Violence.
Yeah, but I don't think History of Violence is... I don't think that film is going to deliver the supporting actor Oscar.
Yeah, I think George Clooney. Because
you know, sometimes they buck that trend and recognize a performance even within a maybe slightly inferior movie. But in this case, I think it's going to go to either Jake, Matt, or George. Mm. I doubt that either Paul Giamatti or William Hurt will get it, simply because I don't think the movies are quite in the same league.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking George Clooney, because Syriana, Hollywood would like to send a message to the country about, with the oil and our reliance on oil and all that. I'm thinking,
sure.
Huh?
I haven't actually seen that movie, though. I was at a dinner the other night and giving a diatribe about oil companies, and someone accused me of quoting the movie. So apparently I know the message already.
Yeah, and then best animated film, Howl's Moving Castle. I haven't seen any of these. The Corpse Bride, Wallace and Gromit, and The Curse of Weir Rabbit. Now, who's that? Is that related to Bugs Bunny? No.
No, Wallace and Gromit is that's of course the famous claymation from Aardman Studios, and this was their first Wallace and Gromit full length feature film.
Really?
I took one of my daughters to go see it, and we loved it.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Now they have a TV show.
I think that one's actually going to win. I think that one will probably win over
really?
Spider Hulk Moving Castle.
Wow. And then you say best adapted screenplay, Brokeback Mountain's up again. I mean, it's amazing how this movie is just rolling through Hollywood, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
it's
got the two...
for a lot of awards, and I suspect it's going to win a number of them.
Yeah, well, it's got the two big stars, and it's got the director, Ang Lee. Ang Lee, is that his name? He's a notorious director. And they get the best foreign language film is Don't Tell... from Italy, Joyeux Noël from France, Paradise Now, I haven't seen any of those. Now, what is this? Paradise Now to Palestine. Now, somebody's saying that's actually an excellent movie. I don't know what that's about. It's from the Palestinians' point of view?
Sorry, I missed the first part of that.
Oh, about Palestine Now, or Paradise Now.
Oh, Paradise Now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that that's actually an excellent movie. I haven't caught it yet, though. And it is, my understanding is it's from a Palestinian film director, and that it presents, apparently most of the films out of Palestine are, let's say, similar.
Hmm.
They all have a similar basic outlook, and this one is somewhat different from the rest of the pack, which I think is one reason it's being recognized.
Really? And then just two little things before we leave. You have Bryan Adams played a concert in Karachi, Pakistan, huh?
Yeah, it's actually the first Western artist to play in Pakistan since 9/11. So
really?
It's been, more than four years. But tickets went on sale. They said they sold more than 20,000 of them at, $58 to $83 in rupees. I don't know what the average wages are there, but they said they sold more than 20,000, although all the reports on the concert, we've got a couple people on Desi Critics who were actually at the show, so we've got the inside scoop there, but they're tending to quote a number closer to 15,000 as far as people actually there.
Really? So it went very well, so he's the first, that's amazing. It's I guess that's a good sign that the country, some Western entertainment starting to come in there, huh?
Yeah, they had a lot of security, although apparently they managed to move people more quickly than, say, our airports, cough, cough. But apparently even with all the security and people worried, so there was a lot of, riot gear and the whole stuff, everybody ready for problems, but everything went smoothly. They had apparently a great concert, well-received, with fireworks and a lot of fun. So hopefully there will be more, Western artists making it into Pakistan.
Really? And then also you have the Grammy nomination, are out in 108 categories.
I had no idea that there were 108 different awards.
Amazing. Neither did I.
Everything from Record of the Year to Best Traditional R&B Vocal Performance versus Best R&B Performance by a Duo or a Group with Vocals. Best Traditional Tropical Latin Album. That's one of, a half dozen different Latin album awards.
Well, didn't President Clinton win a Grammy for his book or something? I remember somebody, I think him or Hillary, somebody won a Grammy for their book.
A book on an audio book or something like that. I didn't really remember that. I don't remember the details, though.
Yeah, I had no idea. It was 108 categories. That's amazing. Well, and also the Oscars have a lot of categories we never hear about either, because it's all the technical award.
They've got 24 or more. Now, let me ask you, Sean, do you want to make a prediction for Record of the Year?
Oh, I have no clue about music. I only listen to talk radio.
we Belong Together by Mariah Carey.
There you go.
Feel Good Inc. by The Gorillaz featuring De La Soul. Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day. Hollaback Girl by Gwen Stefani. And Gold Digger by Kanye West.
No, not him, no. I go with the Mariah Carey because she's hot looking. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what.
Well, I'm a big fan of the Gorillaz. I do enjoy that song. I do think that Hollaback Girl is one of the most disgusting pieces of music, so-called music, ever broadcast over the airwaves. I feel stupider knowing that song exists. Mm. It's so bad.
Really?
Yeah, it's the only song worse, I think, out this year or last year was My Humps by the Black Eyed Peas. Fortunately, that's not up for Record of the Year.
Wow, amazing.
But I would suspect, I mean, it's Mariah Carey's year. She sold, you know, basically all the albums in the world, apparently, sold more than anybody else. So you're probably right. She'll probably take it, which will be too bad for the Gorillaz.
Yeah. Well, Philippine, we'll let you go. We're at the end of our little segment.
Right.
We thank you for being on from blogcritics.org and DesiCritics.org.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Have a good night. And that was Philip Wynn of blogcritics.org with our state of the blogcritics.org address and a little comment about what's going on with their site. It's pretty amazing. They got a nice little site here. Everything that's going on over India and Pakistan, it's wow. I mean, you know, the time it takes to put something like that together, I am impressed. You know what I'm saying? And now we'll get Koenig Rules. Let me give him a little signal to call in with his Battlestar Galactica address. So, and introduce me as Koenig Lose. Loss? What is this? I don't know. Get it? Win? Lose? Oh. What the hell are you talking about? So I'll have him introduce himself probably. Introduce me as Koenig Lose. Get it? Win, lose. I don't know. Koenig Lose. I don't know. Well, his name is Koenig Rules, isn't it? So what the hell? So we'll see how he wants to be introduced. But anyway, thank you, Philip Wynn, for being on for blogcritics.org. It's been a nice little night here. We got the State of the Union. We got the Democratic response. We got the discussion about that. We got the address from Philip Wynn for Blog Critics. Now we're going to have an address from Koenig Rules with the state of Battlestar Galactica. So we'll give him his proper intro before we get the Cylons revved up with the band there in the corner.
Attention,
there they
attention.
Are. Oh, really? It's a different one. Oh, that was cool, though. I haven't heard that one in a while, have we? Oh, we heard it at the end of the show. We've talked about it. We heard it every week.
Show's over.
Just a little technical snafu. You know, State of the Union address. You can never get the technical glitches boot out. I'll just, there we go. Wow. You change it up a little bit. That's good. Sick of that other old song. We're joined by Koenig Rules. Is that you, sir?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Now, you said Koenig, you might call it Koenig. Well, you might be called as Koenig what, you said?
Koenig Lose because you had Philip Wynn.
Oh, I see. Okay, I was wondering. Wait a minute now. It's been Koenig Rules for about a year now. Now you're changing your name. That's not allowed. So,
that's a joke.
All right, you ready? I'll get Mr. Speaker. We present Koenig Rules with his Galactica State of the Galactica address.
Thank you.
Wait till the drums start here. I'm sorry. The muffler was last week. Now we got the drums playing. Hold on. There you go. Mr. Speaker, Koenig Rules.
Thank you, Sean O'Mac, and all you Galactica listeners out there. There was much trepidation when Battlestar Galactica first was being reimaged as a miniseries for the Sci-Fi Channel. The original series fans said it would suck. Can we say suck?
Yes.
The new fans were cautiously expectant. When the miniseries did air, it was awesome. Here was a series with exciting effects, adult stories, no kids or cutesy robots except for Boxy, who eventually disappeared, thank the Lords of Kobol. There were even some killer Babe Viper pilots and Cylons. Plus, we had a commander that kicked ass, can we say ass, and a strong female president of the colonies. After the miniseries aired, generating some of the highest ratings to date, rumors abounded on the boards that this would be it for Battlestar. It was just too damn expensive to make on Sci-Fi's limited programming budget. But in a daring move, Sci-Fi partnered with England's Sky One and the rest is history. Sky One would show the first season prior to its airing on Sci-Fi. When Galactica premiered on Sky, it earned killer ratings, and leaks abounded as to what would happen in each episode. Plus, illegal downloads here in the United States became the norm. Battlestar Galactica writer and producer Ron Moore eventually stopped this type of scheduling and convinced Sci-Fi to air subsequent seasons on its network prior to Sky One. As BSG has become a staple of Sci-Fi Friday nights, generating the highest ratings of any of the shows to date, it remains to be determined just how much of a future arrangement Battlestar has with Sky One. In any case, we are indebted to England for facilitating the process of giving its viewers a superior sci-fi show, unlike any other show on the small screen. A special thanks go to our cousins overseas. Battlestar has now reached critical acclaim. Positive reviews crop up in any number of places, including Rolling Stones magazine and Variety. Time has even rated Galactica as the number one show for the 05-06 TV season. So let's review season one and season two, determining which episodes are the best and the worst. Both seasons had some killer episodes and a few stinkers, too. You can check out more detailed reviews. They are up at Galactica Station and Hollywood North Report and can be easily accessed via your computer. In Season 1, there was 33, which actually transpires shortly after the miniseries. The Cylons keep pursuing the fleet and attack like clockwork every 33 minutes. Then there was Bastille Day, which introduced the original series actor Richard Hatch to the reimaged version. Hatch plays a reformed terrorist, Tom Zarek, who can supply the manpower to replenish the Galactica's dwindling water supplies on the ice planet. Personally, the better episode with Hatch from season one is Colonial Day, where Zarek tries to attain the vice presidency but fails, leaving, of all people, Dr. Gaius Baltar to assume the post. Flesh and Bone and the Hand of God continued to generate impressive stories. One cannot forget the memorable interrogation between Kara Starbuck Thrace and Cylon Leoben, and Apollo's attack on the Cylon base to retrieve the precious Tylium fuel was a fantastic FX sequence. Perhaps the second part of Cobalt's Last Gleaming will go down as one of the most shocking cliffhangers of any sci-fi series to date, where Cylon agent Boomer shoots Commander Adama in the chest twice, with Ty, Apollo, Dee, and other officers looking on in amazement. Honorable mention should be given to You Can't Go Home Again and 6 Degrees of Separation, with Kara flying a Cylon Raider back to the fleet and Six assuming the physical form of Shelley Godfrey to betray her lover, Baltar. The worst episode of Season 1 had to be Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, where we are introduced to Ty's manipulative wife, Ellen. The story also misled viewers into thinking Adama was a Cylon, at least for a while. This episode did not do anything to move the series forward, although Ellen was nice to look at when she didn't open her mouth. On to Season 2. The most anticipated story arc was the Cain trilogy, Pegasus and Resurrection Ship Parts 1 and 2. It almost looked like they were redoing the original series Living Legend. But then the arc veered off in a whole new direction, with Commander Helena Cain being the bad guy, abusing Cylons and killing her own kind in order to survive. The final chapter, Resurrection Ship Part 2, may not have had an especially long battle between the two battle stars and the resurrection vessel, but it was still pleasing to behold, especially from Apollo's point of view. Perhaps the stinkers of Season 2 were those few episodes that did not have Edward James Olmos in them as Commander Adama. Scattered and Fragged come to mind, although Chief Tyro was finally given something to do other than repair Vipers on the flight deck. speaking of the Chief, the best Tyro episode of the season was Flight of the Phoenix, hands down. Talk about a man pouring himself into his work, and with the help of the crew building a stealth Viper, the Blackbird, from scratch. If there was one thing wrong with Resurrection Ship Part 2, it was that the Blackbird was destroyed so quickly after it took so long to construct. Honorable mention should be given to Valley of Darkness, where the Cylons board the Galactica, something I always wanted to see in the original series. Also of note are the latest episodes, Epiphanies and Black Market, for fleshing out the characters of Roslyn and Apollo, respectively. And while Ron Moore might not have liked Black Market as it is Cylon-free, I did not think it was all that bad. Adama's words in Black Market were not only prophetic, but described where Battlestar is headed this season. He stated, "All the Cylons have to do is sit back and wait as we kill each other." Truer words were never spoken. We should also mention the current one-minute ad for Battlestar, which shows a beautiful human fetus until the camera zooms in on its back, which suddenly starts to glow, a deadly Cylon shade of red. Not since the coming attractions for V, the miniseries, has there been such an effective piece of advertising for a sci-fi show. There is great anticipation towards the two-part finale to Season 2, Lay Down Your Burdens, if for no other reason than it has sci-fi veteran actor Dean Stockwell in it, playing Cylon brother Cavill. All in all, Battlestar has given viewers a new look into the Galactica universe, as well as mankind's survival as a species in a post-9/11 environment. Even the moral majority is embracing it, now that the semi-nude scenes with Six are being kept to a minimum. Thank you, Ron Moore, for your compassion towards the conservatives' agenda. But there are still some folks out there who think Battlestar has an agenda, that it is part of some vast conspiracy against our government, that it will cause the collapse of our society in its portrayal of the Cylons as religious and God-fearing terrorists who need to be understood and not killed. To those critics, I say, poppycock. Right now, we need to show those cynical folks that we will not stand for this bull. We need to make a united front, fight the opposition, and keep this show on the airwaves for at least 5 seasons. Then we can talk about spin-offs, a big screen version of Battlestar, or a series of continuing sci-fi specials. With your support, we can do all these things. We should never give up the fight to deliver quality sci-fi programming to TV viewers. Yes, even to those who hate Battlestar, but still tune in because they do recognize just how good the show really is. We will succeed in our efforts. Mark my words, we can make a difference. God bless America, and God bless the new and improved Battlestar. Thank you, and good night.
Wow, that was impressive. Cody Gruhl's there. So there you go. The audience is going crazy. The senators are getting up and down, the Democrats and Republicans. I think you want more of the Democrats than the Republicans, but I'm going to tell you, that made more sense than Bush's. There you go. The Cylons liked it, too, so there you go. It made more sense than the...
do we have Muffet?
Cylons are going crazy. I don't think we have Muffet, do we? Muffet's on extended leave. I think Muffet's in the rehabbing. You know what I mean? It's too many late nights drinking with Ty and his wife. You know what I mean? So Muffet's had to go to the back to the asylum there. But very good. Yeah, a lot better than Bush's state of disillusion, delusion.
Well,
speech.
Thanks. I'll take that as a compliment, I think.
No, it was very good. Now, a question I'm getting from the chairman. Do you have the ratings for...
No.
What,
no,
what's,
but they're releasing them later and later now, like Wednesday, Thursday, something like that.
Why are they waiting so long? I mean, before we used to have them Monday or Tuesday, you know what I'm saying?
You know, I'm thinking that maybe when it first was coming out, they were thinking, well, we're not sure if we're going to do a season two or not. But now that they've already committed to a season three, I really I'm going to hate saying this, but I really don't think they're as worried about the ratings as they were for season one.
Really?
I mean, it's doing the best out of all the shows, so
yeah.
Unless it takes a disastrous turn, I think it'll be around
two
probably the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then now I saw you in the chat room earlier during Phillip's segment. You're talking about the, excuse me, Doctor Who. You say you seem to like that a little bit more than you like BSG.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
My God.
In fact, if you ever get a chance to see that season in its entirety, it is also nicely strung together. It's like a season that could stand on its own, and it's just good.
Really?
Are you familiar with Doctor Who?
Oh, yes.
Because they have the Daleks.
Oh,
I mean, they start coming out around in the middle of the season, and then it's just an extravaganza. There's a two-part finale. It's just, without giving anything away, it's just fascinating to watch.
Yeah.
The effects are great. The characters are great. It's good. It's a good show.
Now, how'd you see it? You had the DVD or what?
I have a friend who I sort of have been chatting with on the sci-fi boards who lives in England. And he made copies of all the discs. I put them on all the discs for me.
Very nice. Very nice. Because the season one's supposed to go on sale here, I think, in whatever it was, February or March, and then all of a sudden sci-fi announced they're going to air it, so now they pushed back the DVD release till somewhere in the,
July.
July now, so sci-fi can get the, all the reviewers.
That's right.
To watch the show.
So the DVD set will have, they aired after each episode in England, what was called a Doctor Who Confidential. It was a special.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to have all 13 of those specials with the DVD set, too.
Really? Now, what do you think of Black Market?
I liked it.
Yeah,
it was different. I was going into the story thinking there's not going to be any Cylons, so can this just sustain itself? And finally, I think they presented a different side to Lee. I mean, we know a lot about Kara, we know a lot about Dee, but we really didn't know too much about Lee, except there was a falling out between him and his father.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think, as you get to know him a little bit more, especially since he was facing death with the resurrection ship, you get to see that he's not this idealistic, pure person that you thought he was. So.
Yeah. Well, especially he was carrying on with that hooker there in Cloud Nine there.
Yeah, but that hooker was real smart because by the end of the episode, she said that I'm not a replacement for your love on Caprica. So she knew that he was treating her like his ex or whatever, and that his original. Whether it was fiancé, I don't know how far it got, but she wanted to give him a baby, and he said no. So he felt a little bit guilty. So from a psychological viewpoint, it wasn't love so much as he really wanted to care for someone, probably the kid.
Yeah, and how about Fisk getting strangled and killed, huh?
Yeah, another commander in 2 weeks, right?
Both on the same ship. The Pegasus is cursed. First Kane gets blasted by Gina, and now Fisk gets strangled.
Yep.
Know?
I don't envision too much past the second season, a long life for the Pegasus,
Now, who's going to take command of the Pegasus now that Fisk is dead? Ty going to go over there and take command? Or
I don't know. Maybe they'll introduce a new character.
How about that guy that shows up once in a while? What was his name? Captain, what was his name? He showed up after Adama got shot, and then Gata says, you're in second now because Ty was in charge.
Oh, is that the sort of heavy set guy
that
was in the miniseries?
Yeah, he popped up at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Maybe he's going to turn up on Pegasus now as the commander or something.
You know, people did complain during Epiphanies that they didn't focus on the Pegasus at all. So now, they did focus. I just thought it was cool the way they brought back Tom Zarek, too.
Oh, yeah,
Because he seemed, after the sixth or seventh episode, he was nowhere to be found. And now he seems like he's going to play a pivotal role again.
Yeah, he's they left it. Last time we saw him was where were we at? We saw him on Cobalt. Yeah, we saw him on Cobalt.
Right.
And then we didn't see him since then.
That's right.
And, it seems like now you're starting to make you feel like he's been up to stuff while he's been off screen. Captain
mm-hmm.
Kelly. Ebnetter is saying it's Captain Kelly. That's the one that showed
up. Captain Kelly,
yeah.
Yes.
And, Zarek, with this episode, it lets you know that he's been up to stuff, off screen. You know, he sent up the black market
right.
and all this stuff. Because it turned out, actually, I believe he was one behind the black market, right?
Mm-hmm. He knew a lot more than he was telling Lee. So.
And that actor that played the leader, or whatever it was, the African-American, he was very good. He's been in other shows I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
But wow, I mean, I was impressed with him. I mean, he was very good in that role.
I think I was saying this in the chat room before I came on there, the original series lost its way about mid-season. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't know where they were going. And I think in this version of Battlestar, they don't want to give everything out too soon, so they want you to still continue to be hooked mm-hmm. without having to rely on the Cylons and space battles every week. And so now they want you to see, are they going to bring back, in a series of flashbacks, that female? Did Lee's girlfriend, did she survive? I think they're going to probably connect it up a little bit more in a later episode, whether it's this season or next season.
Yeah, well, they have a tendency of bringing these storylines back from, like, the first season, or they sprinkle in scenes from, episodes which you thought had nothing to do with anything that's going on, and
right.
turns out they're threading it through the whole series, which
mm-hmm.
I think is outstanding, how they kind of remind you, this has been going on since day one of the show,
Right.
Because like I said, with Zarek being part of this black market business, he already proved back with Roslyn smuggling her off the Cloud Nine. They showed you he's capable of this stuff. Yeah,
right.
So they planned those scenes months ago. Now all this stuff you're seeing now, this is why mm-hmm. he is who he is. But I liked it. I mean, it wasn't full of action, and a lot of people said this episode's kind of just plopped in our laps, and nothing led up to it. Just kind of all of a sudden there's a black market and all of a sudden Lee Adama's having sex on Cloud Nine with some hooker.
Right. But I think sometimes Ron Moore wants to go for a surprise and shock. Just when you think you figured it out, it's sort of like he'll throw these curveballs at mm-hmm. you. So he wants to keep you on your toes, and so no character I don't think is going to be cast in an entirely good light. Look at Admiral Adama, where for a time, people thought he was a Cylon, and he was acting strange when he was brought resuscitated and had the operation. I mean, and Roslyn, she comes across as a strange character too. At times, really good. At other times, very manipulative too. Like she wanted Bautar to leave the post of vice president, and he didn't want to. So I mean, you see a power struggle even going on there, and mm-hmm. you kind of wonder if Bautar might not team up with Zarek.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, that would be real cool.
Yeah, be interesting. Well, he also is the one that sent Gina that nuke.
That's right.
Too. So.
That's right. So he's his own worst enemy, and he could bring the destruction of the fleet.
Well, then next week is what? What's this episode called next week? Scar? Is this Scar coming up? I lost it here. I already put my notes away. But now this one,
the name of the episode, but it's about a Cylon Raider that just keeps on attacking Viper pilots.
Yeah, and there's some kind of a rift between Starbuck and the other one. What's her name? Racetrack? There's some kind of tension between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And Starbuck wasn't in this week's episode, last week's episode at all. She wasn't even seen this episode. So, I mean, I wonder if we'll see more of that. It'll be an episode here and there where one of the big stars won't be in it at all. Will Lee Adama be in this show coming up, or
Yeah, and you know what? It is surprisingly like the original series, because if you recall, sometimes Starbuck was stranded on a planet.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes Apollo would be stranded on a planet, and it would be their story. So... Mm-hmm. they are doing similar things too, except they're not getting too ridiculous in terms of always landing on a planet that has oxygen.
And
you know, I mean, it was getting strange after a while how they would come across all the planets on the Ode Show with oxygen.
Yeah, especially when Fred Astaire showed up. I mean, that was always.
Oh yeah, it was bad.
Yeah, well, it was like I told Katie when she was on the first time. I said, when if Charo ever shows up in this galactic, I'm done with watching that show. Yeah. But Night Sky is saying Scar is the next episode.
Scar.
So now, where are we at now? How many episodes are we in now? We're two, three, four. This will be the fifth episode, right?
This is going to be the fifth, and then six more, including this week.
We're
going to move fast.
Yeah, it's going to pick up steam now. And now that commercial has been pretty outstanding with the
baby. Yeah.
I finally caught it. I got to see this time. I'm like, whoa, that's pretty cool. I mean,
isn't that great?
Yeah, with the music playing. And it seems like when that baby is born, all hell's going to break loose, huh?
See, and they sort of have given you a spoiler in a way because you now know that the kid is going to get born, you know. But the thing is, it's a hybrid. So, what are they? Are they going to do something like have the kid mature real fast, real quick? Mm-hmm. I mean, they did that in V, if you remember, and some other sci-fi shows too. You know, you just wonder what's up with the baby.
Yeah, actually, Ebnutter is saying in the chat room that Jamie Bamber was on paternity leave for part of season one. So that's why he wasn't in some of the episodes. He was on paternity leave with his baby.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
And then also question is, where are we at? Apollo wasn't in Litmus in season one. Yeah, I said that. He wasn't in an episode, and we know Olmos was off. How many episodes at the beginning of the season?
He was off about four.
Four.
He did have one, the opening episode.
Oh, yeah.
There was a flashback.
Drowning the baby in the Baltar's baby in the water on Kobol.
Right.
Yeah.
But then I think, you know, by episode five, he was back on his feet, but,
Yeah, so that was interesting. And Rosalind, she's been in every episode, hasn't she?
Yeah, but in some, she's only been in it maybe like a couple minutes at most.
Yeah.
What I like about it is, if you've noticed in these last two episodes, they're going back to the number on the board,
the number
of survivors. Remember, she made a special point in the opening episodes of counting how many people survived, and then that went by the wayside, and now it seems like they're bringing that back.
Yeah, because Billy made a point of pointing that out to Baltar that board was important to her because it's
right. So they're trying, and Epiphanes was good, like I said, because it linked up storylines too. So they are trying to connect up things from seasons, and that's always good storytelling, I think.
Oh yeah, well, we're going to connect the dots and everything. That was very good as well. And then we see Ebnetter says there's been two no Starbuck episodes this season though. So she
Let's
wasn't
see,
two
was this
episodes.
One
this
and
one and well, I don't know. Oh no, the first episode, right? She was in that one. She missed. Well, I don't know what episode.
What
she
about
missed.
The second one where the Cylons boarded?
Oh, that's right.
The Galactica. I'm trying to think.
That's
Where was she?
She was on the planet.
She
was on Caprica.
On the planet.
She was on Caprica. Yeah, that's right. Because she said, remember when she was on the second time, that she said she isn't in much of the first 10 or first full couple episodes of the second season. So she flew back and forth to L.A. So that's probably why she wasn't in that second episode.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. When they boarded the ship. Yeah, that makes sense now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Koenig, we'll let you go at the end of our time.
Well, thank you for having me on and delivering the State of Galactica.
Absolutely. It was wonderful, and we hope to have Aaron Douglas on next week. I'm waiting for a final confirmation because he was out of town, apparently. But he said after the third he'd be available. So
that would be cool.
That'd be nice. So, yeah, Katie's nice to have on, but she's still shooting a movie, and we'll take Aaron. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Good night. And that was Koenig Rules from Galactica Station, and I guess he's going to be at blogcritic.org now, and also from sciencefictionbuzz.com website, and he writes about just every kind of sci-fi site known to man, I think, but...